Conclusion. Forewarned is forearmed. The objective in war is a better state of peace, even if only from your own point of view. Hence, it is essential to conduct war with constant regard to the peace you desire. Sir Basil Henry Liddell Hart, eminent British strategist. No other way. Do you want to live as a serf in peace? In a 15-minute company gulag, created and owned by a few in the global power elite? Or do you want to live free in a nation in which the people have the final say on the laws that they have to live with? I believe that the complex is under unprecedented pressure. Not since President Eisenhower called out the defense and science lobbies have they been put on the back foot as much as they are now. The almost monopolistic grip that they had on the news media has been wrested from them with the growth of the internet and social media, and this has taken its toll on their ability to control us. Their true interests have been revealed more clearly than ever, and their responses have made this ever more obvious. I am hoping that what you have read has forearmed you with some tools to deal with what is coming. The battle for democracy is on, and the totalitarians in the CCP, the three-letter agencies, and the stooges in elected posts know it. When I began this book, I made it clear that it was not an academic work, that it was more of a briefing pack and a how-to manual aimed at bringing us a better, truer democracy and not a bloody utopia. As I began wrapping up this volume, I reflected on how the Europeans threw off the tight bonds of the Church during the Reformation and the Enlightenment, and they did not do so just to see us tied up once more, this time by the state. Our time as forelock-tugging serfs is over, and we are not here to serve the next elite group settling itself into the seat of power. Those times are over. It was recently brought to my attention that some in the Conservative Party used to back aspects of direct democracy, but this was when their fortunes were low in the 2000s. Those lauding Swiss-style improvements included Michael Gove, Daniel Hannan, Jeremy Hunt, Kwasi Kwarteng, Priti Patel, and Teresa Villiers. Not a peep now, though. Of course, the website where they loaded up several detailed documents selling the benefits of the referendum is no more. It has been taken over by a bodybuilding supplements group. The Swiss tweaking was forgotten, but this might have been the greatest opportunity any party has ever missed. The old Progressive Conservative Party in Canada was wiped out in 1993, despite its being the governing party. A bit like the Tories now, but the Canadians dropped 154 of their 156 seats, a warning the direct democracy-denying former Etonians have ignored at their peril. And we have a tool to help send them on their way, or to take note of if they wish to have any chance of survival. The adoption of the hybrid and its referendum weapon may be how they snatch salvation from the jaws of annihilation. If not, they can reflect on their destruction at leisure whilst the direct democracy movement becomes a popular and unstoppable force. This movement, of which I am a member, is working with others in deploying a revolutionary voting platform called BlockVote, which uses blockchain technology to allow truly secure voting. It is the same technology as used for financial trades. The app displays votes coming up in Parliament and local councils so that constituents can vote before their representatives do, ensuring that they can monitor whether the choices made by the electorate are supported by their elected officials. In addition, the app allows initiatives to be created by voters to be put to the electorate. Let's take the initiative. It's that simple, folks. Then we're in charge. You just have to vote for people and parties that support the hybrid until you get it. Otherwise, I hope you enjoy eating bugs. Those who are pessimistic about how the mass might vote should bear in mind the old attitudes of the civilized towards Aboriginals in remote places, denigrating them as brutish and unreformable. In fact, seemingly warlike peoples, such as the tough islanders in New Guinea who suffered from endemic warfare, became peace-loving as soon as security was assured. Ethnographic studies showed how much they had been terrified by their conflict-riddled way of life and hated the constant endemic war that had surrounded them. The same went for South America with the Yanomama, where treachery and ambushes were part of daily life. And the Yanomama are happy to stop fighting. They hate war. Given the opportunity, elimination of threat and adequate food, the Yanomama stop fighting right away. Just as the New Guineans and the Yanomama are not crazy for war, the people of the world are not keen on treating others unfairly. I have found that the golden rule is a common feature of life pretty much everywhere that I have lived, with constitutional protections in place and the common sense, tolerance, and decency of the people to rely upon, with the referendum ready to be brought out in our defense, you and I will sleep easier than we do now. I am sure that you are as tired as I am of the crooked politicians, their banker backers, and criminal enforcers having free rein to decide our futures for us. I believe that history is largely a record of hubris, with elites failing and civilizations decaying swiftly as the untreated sores turn to gangrene. The latest species of unprincipled politicians morphed out of the old bunch of aristocrats and gentry battling for the levers of control during our 19th century emancipations. The globalization of the targets of the new financial elites has benefited from the organizational and planning skills of the likes of Rhodes and the capture of the conglomerates and the institutions by the billionaire foundation funders, a process worsening by the day as the tax-exempt vehicles become active profit centers, not just narrative-forging tools. Will anyone care? Will anyone listen? I hope that this book will affect the thinking of some of you enough to act. How hopeful am I that it will? Well, in 1975, Solzhenitsyn had this to say about the Ukrainian genocide in his warning to the West speech. They died on the very edge of Europe, and Europe didn't even notice it. The world didn't even notice it. 6 million persons. The fate of those millions affected me before he had spoken of them and set me on my path to expanding freedom and real democracy. So hopefully, my time spent on these pages won't be wasted. I am disappointed in America. I am not disappointed in the American people, and I say this as one of their great friends. The elites were less obviously in control back in the 70s, but they are grabbing the wheel now and are trying to kick anybody confronting them into the back of the bus. However, they are few and the passengers many. The Swiss hybrid station remains open, and I reckon the people can still grab that wheel and head over to top up the tank with some constitutionally approved advisory referendums to keep the bus on the road, but steered by them. I began with Dicey on the British Constitution, so I will start my rundown with a 2010 assessment of the constitutional issue from the former UK Supreme Court Justice, Lord Jonathan Sumption, OBE KC. As you will see, given the will, we can run our own show, and it's just one vote away. Our constitution is not entrenched. It can be amended by a simple majority of both houses of parliament, or even if the Parliament Act is invoked in the House of Commons alone. There is no requirement for an enhanced majority, a referendum, or any other formal step which might provoke serious discussion of the implications. Indeed, those parts of our constitution which are based on practice can be amended without even the formality of parliamentary sanction by a mere change of political sentiment. One consequence of this state of affairs is that constitutional change occurs constantly but imperceptibly in Britain, without necessarily being intended by any of the main interests involved. The great Victorian sages Bagehot and Dicey thought that this was part of the efficiency of the British state. A less self-confident age is not so sure. And once we have it, Dicey indicates why it is worth the struggle. I am quite certain that once established, the referendum would never be gotten rid of by anything short of a revolution. There will be a reckoning, and we will live in that democracy they keep telling us about, but which we have yet to see. A better man than I had this to say to individuals in the parties who are the patsies, pawns, and dupes of the power elite, whom he referred to as the High Cabal. From the gathering storm, we must regard as deeply blameworthy before history the conduct not only of the British National and mainly Conservative government, but of the Labour Socialist and Liberal parties, both in and out of office, during this fatal period. Delight in smooth-sounding platitudes, refusal to face unpleasant facts, desire for popularity and electoral success, irrespective of the vital interests of the state, genuine love of peace and pathetic belief that love can be its sole foundation, obvious lack of intellectual vigour in both leaders of the British coalition government, marked ignorance of Europe and aversion from its problems in Mr. Baldwin, the strong and violent pacifism which at this time dominated the Labour Socialist Party, the utter devotion of the Liberals to sentiment apart from reality, the failure and worse than failure of Mr. Lloyd George, the erstwhile great wartime leader, to address himself to the continuity of his work, the whole supported by overwhelming majorities in both Houses of Parliament. All these constituted a picture of British fatuity and fecklessness, which, though devoid of guile, was not devoid of guilt, and, though free from wickedness or evil design, played a definite part in the unleashing upon the world of horrors and miseries, which, even so far as they have unfolded, are already beyond comparison in human experience. Winston Churchill.